Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, August 24th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, MC to reopen aviation program. Board votes to accept a plan that conditionally reopens maintenance technology program. By Mella McEwen. For months, Midland College trustees had heard the public outcry over the shuttering of the school's aviation maintenance technology program. At Tuesday's board meeting, they responded, voting unanimously to accept a plan to conditionally reopen the program. We heard loud and clear the potential for growth in the Permian Basin for aviation maintenance, Midland College President Steve Thomas told trustees, citing letters, phone calls, and media reports. In response, he said he asked staff to help determine what could be done to reopen the program. He then offered a conditional reopening plan that would restart the program in spring 2023 with a minimum enrollment of 12 students. If it is to reopen in the spring, he said efforts need to start right away. The plan calls for a revamped advisory committee and robust marketing and student recruitment efforts. He said there would be reduced faculty, but the budget the trustees are considering contains funding for operations. The updated curriculum would have to be in compliance with Federal Aviation Administration standards, and the school would have to notify the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools Commission on College and the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board of the program's revival. External funding would also have to be secured. Annual unduplicated enrollment would have to rise to 50 students, and monthly updates would be presented to the board, with a viability assessment to be held in the spring of 2025. Luckily, Thomas said, some of the program's infrastructure remains in place. Board Chair Paul Morris said the biggest problem with the program had been attracting and maintaining students. Thomas said permission would have to be received from Odessa and Howard colleges. The three schools have a policy of not recruiting students from each other's territories. And there is a chance of targeting the Metroplex, where there are interested students, but not enough slots in aviation maintenance programs. Thomas praised the community's support of the program and that of companies like Kepler Aerospace, AST and Science, and charter aircraft companies like Deerhorn Aviation. But, he said, that support must be robust, and those companies who said they needed graduates of the program must take a seat at the advisory committee table. Or else, he cautioned, the program could again suffer the fate that brought about its initial cancellation. In 2020-21, the program ran a deficit of $367,987 when revenues were subtracted from costs and enrollment fell from a high of 31 in 2018-19 to 15 in 2021, with 14 completing certification. Trustee Scott Kidwell agreed, telling those attending the board meeting, "I appreciate the energy in the room on this. There's a lot of community support. The advisory committee is an important first step. So is marketing and recruiting, funding. It all requires community support." Trustee Steve Kaiser, vice chair, supported the conditional reopening of the program, but added, "We need to know exactly what we're doing and exactly who is doing it. We need more than just ideas." Former Midland Mayor Mike Cannon was pleased trustees voted for the conditional reopening, saying it was the right decision. Closing of the program may be a blessing in disguise, Cannon said, explaining that it made people realize what was being lost and that they needed to get on board if the program is to be saved. This article is entitled McNeil, School Board Should Listen. Realtor Ready to Hear What Constituents Say About District by Stuart Doreen. It's time for Midland ISD elected officials to listen to the concerns of those in the community. That is a reason Realtor Carrie McNeil said she's running for the District 6 seat on the Midland ISD board. McNeil will take on Sarah Burleson for the seat in Central to West Midland and includes areas north of Andrews Highway and south of Wadley Avenue, from Garfield Street west. The district also includes Grassland Estates and areas north and west of Grassland to Briarwood Avenue. The current representative, Rick Davis, decided not to run for re-election. I noticed that not all trustees took the time to listen to their constituents' concerns, McNeil said. I believe as an elected official, it is our duty to listen to the needs of those people living in their districts. And for these reasons, it was an easy decision. I would like the opportunity to represent District 6 and bring a fresh set of ideas and perspectives to our community. She said, as a mother of two Midland ISD students, she witnessed the successes and struggles within the district firsthand. My daughter graduated from Lee High School in 2018 as an honor student and student athlete, McNeil wrote. My son's experience was entirely different. He struggled with his 504 plans for dyslexia and ADD. Seeing him struggle and recognizing the lack of resources, we decided to make a very difficult decision and withdrew him from MISD. We opted to enroll him in a specialized homeschool program where he flourished and has now graduated. Witnessing the differences in my children's experience made me take a closer look at what was transpiring at MISD. McNeil stated that she has lived in Midland since the late 1980s and that she attended Midland ISD schools and graduated from Midland College. I have been blessed to raise my children here, McNeil stated. I grew up in a family where service to others was important. I come from a long line of military, medical, and law enforcement. McNeil lists being on the board of directors for the Permian Basin Board of Realtors. I serve on multiple committees and have been awarded 2018 Rookie of the Year and 2021 Ambassador of the Year, she wrote in a bio sent to the Reporter-Telegram. She also lists being a licensed paramedic since 2000 and helping with efforts in the aftermath of Hurricane Rita in 2005. She listed the following ways to get in touch with her. On Facebook at McNeil for District 6 or email at carriemcneildistrict6@gmail.com. This is a series of two articles. Under the headline, Midland Ranks High in U.S. for Newer Homes Being Built. Both articles are written by Ben Schaffer. The first article is entitled, Study. Midland's Rent Wage Gap is Less Than Nation. The renter wage gap for millennials in Midland is -12.3%. while the national millennial renter wage gap is -20.6%, according to a new report on filterby.com. The renter wage gap considers the pay renters receive and how much rental housing costs. The new report, which detailed the gap for millennials aged 25 to 41, showed that the average millennial renter in Midland makes $41,885, and the annual wage needed to afford a one-bedroom rental home is $47,760, with a monthly rent of $1,194, according to the report. The report noted 17.7% of millennials in Midland are renters. The rest of the U.S. has a millennial renter wage gap of -20.6%, according to FilterBy.com. The median wage for millennial renters nationwide is $34,555, and the national yearly wage needed to rent a one-bedroom home is $43,547, with 27.2% of millennials renting nationally, the recent report stated. This article is entitled, "Cities' Growing Population Might Be Reason Behind Increase in Newer Housing." Midland ranked 7th of U.S. small cities in percentage of homes built after 2014. The recent study, organized by the Inspection Support Network, detailed U.S. cities with the newest housing, its median homeowner age, and the city's change in population over the last 10 years. In Midland, 10.2% of all homes were built after 2014. On average in the United States, 3.5% of homes were built after 2014, according to the study. The increase in newer housing could be a response to Midland's growing population. In the last 10 years, Midland experienced a 31.3% population increase, according to the Inspection Support Network. The 10.2% share of new housing makes for 5,243 homes that have been built after 2014, according to the study. New housing can be found all over the state of Texas, according to the report. Out of the top 10 cities, regardless of size, with the highest percentage of housing built after 2014, five are Texas cities, with the 11th listing being Midland. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, "Natural Gas is $10 for the First Time Since 08," by Gerson Freitas Jr., Bloomberg. U.S. natural gas prices rose above $10 per million British thermal units for the first time since 2008, extending a scorching rally driven by persistent concern that global stockpiles of the heating and power plant fuel aren't enough to meet winter demand. Prices for the heating and power generation fuel have surged all over the world since last year amid a supply crunch that has been worsened by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. That has left countries scrambling to secure scarce cargoes of liquefied natural gas. Supplies are a concern, particularly in Europe, where an unusually hot summer has been met with reduced flows from Russia. The region has become increasingly dependent on gas shipments from exporters, including the U.S., to shrink the shortfall. But the U.S. faces concerns of its own. The country's gas inventories are 13% down from levels typically seen this time of year, as blazing summer heat has boosted demand for electricity, further tightening supplies ahead of winter. Production from shale fields has been growing only modestly. Meanwhile, exports, which have been constrained since an explosion at a key terminal in Texas in early June, are expected to rebound to full capacity in October as the facility restarts. Shortage fears were heightened further on Monday after Russia said the key Nord Stream pipeline from Russia to Germany will stop for 3 days of maintenance on October 31st, stoking speculation that the conduit won't restart as planned after the work. The news sent European gas futures skyrocketing more than 20% to a record and also buoyed U.S. futures. Gas has rallied more than 150% this year in the U.S. and more than tripled in Europe. Explosive upside should not be ruled out, consultant EBW Analytics Group said Tuesday in a note to clients, citing the outlook for higher temperatures in the U.S. and spiking prices in Europe. Cooling demand has been persistently above normal this summer. In past years, power plants would switch to burning coal when gas prices soared, but that's happening less and less because of climate concerns. That means a traditional ceiling on demand that used to prevent U.S. gas prices from skyrocketing has been largely removed. This article is entitled, U.S. Gas Prices Have Fallen Every Day Since Mid-June, by Chunzi Zhu and Alex Longley, Bloomberg. Gasoline prices are on the biggest streak of declines since 2015, a relief for both consumers and President Joe Biden, who has made fighting inflation a central theme ahead of November midterm elections. U.S. pump prices are averaging $3.892 a gallon after reaching a record high of $5.016 a gallon in mid-June and have fallen for 70 straight days, according to Auto Club AAA. Prices haven't fallen that many days since January 2015. The price drop is a welcome respite for customers after fuel costs early this summer forced many to forego driving vacations and change their lifestyles. President Biden has staked much of his political capital to bringing down energy costs, ordering the release of millions of barrels of crude from the nation's strategic reserves, and rallying other nations to do so. Prices have fallen along with those of crude oil, the major component to the cost of gasoline. A relatively slow summer of fuel consumption and wider recession fears contributed to the decline, as did the release of as much as 1 million barrels per day of oil from U.S. emergency reserves. The release is planned to continue until October. The decline is likely to continue as the driving season winds down. At current levels, pump prices are still 23% higher than the same time last year. This article is entitled, Oil Gains Alongside Dollar Weakness and Potential OPEC Plus Action, by Julia Fanzeres, Bloomberg. Oil rallied as the dollar wobbled, and markets considered the possibility of OPEC Plus cutting production in order to stabilize the volatile futures market. West Texas Intermediate rose 3.7% to settle above $93 a barrel on Tuesday after getting an extra boost as the dollar weakened, making commodities priced in the currency more attractive. Brent settled above $100 for the first time since the beginning of August. Traders are weighing the potential of OPEC Plus decreasing its crude output after Saudi oil minister Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman told Bloomberg, futures prices are increasingly disconnected from fundamentals. Looking ahead, a U.S. oil crude inventory report will be released Wednesday morning, offering markets a glimpse into the country's current demand for oil. Oil continues to march higher today as the market digests comments regarding potential cuts from OPEC Plus, said Stacy Morris, head of energy research at Feta Phi. Market observers will also be closely watching U.S. inventory reports to see if the recent strength in gasoline demand has held up. Adding further support to prices, Kazakh oil exports may be disrupted for months due to damaged moorings. Shippers are being asked to postpone some tanker loadings at the main export terminal for CPC blend crude so that dive teams can assess the damage. Oil has undergone a tumultuous period of trading since Russia's invasion of Ukraine in late February upended flows. OPEC Plus has reversed all of the output cuts made during the pandemic, but Prince Abdulaziz suggested the cartel may need to tighten production again when it meets next month. Futures have lost about a quarter of their value since early June, as escalating fears of an economic slowdown threaten the demand outlook. This article is entitled, Buffett Bets on Plan to Seize on High Prices, by Kyra Buckley, staff writer. The legendary investor Warren Buffett is betting on continued high oil prices and casting a vote of confidence in the leadership of Houston company Occidental Petroleum as it rebounds from the pandemic and its ill-timed acquisition of Anadarko Petroleum, experts said. Buffett's company, Berkshire Hathaway, already holds a 20% stake in Occidental. But on Friday, federal regulators cleared Hathaway to continue buying up shares of Occidental Petroleum up to 50% of the company. Hathaway may not buy that many shares, but it was pushing up against the standard limit of 25%, likely triggering the application for 50%. The move signals confidence in energy stocks from the billionaire investor. Berkshire Hathaway also had a $23.7 billion stake in Chevron at the end of June, according to the Berkshire Hathaway's most recent earning report, in addition to $10 billion in Occidental preferred stock. Berkshire Hathaway also holds contracts to buy $5 billion more in Oxy shares at a later date. For Occidental, it's a signal the company has worked its way through the 2019 takeover of Anadarko Petroleum, which pushed Oxy's debt to around $40 billion only months before heading into the pandemic that crashed oil prices. The collapse in oil prices depressed the value of assets that Oxy had planned to sell to pay down the debt after the merger, putting intense pressure on the company's finances. Berkshire Hathaway has grown into a major Occidental investor since Buffett backed Oxy CEO Vicky Haloob's bid to acquire Anadarko, providing $10 billion that allowed Occidental to outbid Chevron for Anadarko and its extensive holdings in the Permian Basin. Oxy bought Anadarko for $38 billion, paying nearly 80% in cash. This article is entitled, Alabama Man Gets 17 and a Half Years for Producing Child Porn, by Mercedes Cordero. Alpine. An Alabama man was sentenced Monday to 17 and a half years in prison by a federal court in Alpine for producing child pornography, according to the Justice Department. Matthew Jacob Metzler, 32, traveled to Arizona to pick up a minor and then brought the child to Pecos, where he engaged in sexual acts with the child, according to court documents. A search warrant on Metzler's cell phone found child pornography photos along with a sexually explicit video Metzler made with the minor, according to court documents. He was arrested on February 7th. On March 24th, Metzler pleaded guilty to one count of production of child pornography. Those who engage in crimes against children will be held accountable for their actions, said U.S. Attorney Ashley C. Hoff. In February 2022, Metzler traveled to Arizona to pick up a minor and transported the child across state lines to Pecos, Texas. While in Pecos, Metzler, who was living out of his car, engaged in sexual acts with the child. The child was ultimately located by law enforcement and reunited with family in Arizona. This was a great example of multiple agencies in the West Texas community working together to bring justice for a minor victim. The U.S. Attorney's Office will continue to work tirelessly to protect minor victims. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, August 24th. Janie Barnes. Janie Belle Morgette Barnes was born on July 20, 1929 in Kermit to Charles and Celia Morgette and was welcomed home by her heavenly father on August 21st at the age of 93 in Granbury. Janie is preceded in death by her husband Russell Barnes, parents Charles and Celia Morgette, brothers Philip, C.B., Charles, Ralph, and Fred, sisters Jessie May and Celia Pender, and grandchildren Mike, Quentin, Vicky, and Russell Barnes III. Janie is survived by her children, daughter Sandy McAdams, Ben, of Paris, Texas, son Bob Barnes, Earlene, of Granbury, son Jim Barnes, Misty, of Fayetteville, Arkansas, and stepson Russell Barnes II, Linda, of Beaumont. Her brother Jimmy Morgette of Greenwood, Texas, as well as multiple grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Services will be held in Odessa at Frank Wilson Funeral Home, 4635 Oakwood, at 1:30 p.m. on Friday, August 26th, with Pastor Kevin Bushart officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Jeffrey D. Ford. Jeffrey Don Ford went to be with the Lord on August 13th in Abilene after battling a long illness. Jeffrey was born on July 26, 1964 in Midland to Jefferson Lamar Ford and Estelle Eli Ford Marshall. He is survived by one daughter, Brittany Ford, and her spouse, Oliver Gomez, and the light of his world, his grandson, Kai Gomez, of Arlington, Texas. He is also survived by his stepfather, George Bill Marshall, of Bronte, Texas, two sisters, Kathy Cannon and husband Jerry of Weatherford, Julie Carroll and husband Brent of Midland, one brother, Michael Ford, and wife Paula of Haslett, Texas, as well as numerous nieces and nephews. To celebrate Jeffrey's time spent here with us, we will be holding a memorial service on Saturday, August 27th at 11 a.m. at Redeemer Church, 126 North Judd Street, Fort Worth. Following will be a graveside held at Beth Haven Cemetery at 3 p.m., 8646 County Road 355, Stephenville. Mary Lou Midkiff. Mary Lou Midkiff, a longtime Midlander, passed away on August 19th in Midland. Mary Lou was born in Los Angeles, California on August 8, 1937, to Orpha and Charles Davis. She graduated from Rankin High School in 1955. Mary Lou is survived by her sons and daughters-in-law, Johnny and Melissa Midkiff, and Greg Midkiff, all of Midland, and Clay and Krista Midkiff of Edmond, Oklahoma. Also, sister Nancy Rubenstein, brother and sister-in-law Charles and Sue Davis, and sister-in-law Tony Midkiff. She also is survived by many grandchildren and 24 great-grandchildren. She is preceded in death by her husband, John Thomas Midkiff, Cindy Michael Midkiff, daughter-in-law, Catherine Denise Midkiff, granddaughter, parents Orpha Davis and Charles Davis, and sister Vicki Yowell. A memorial service is planned for 10 a.m. Saturday, August 27th at First Christian Church in Midland, followed by a reception. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Wilma Dean O'Bannon Webb Cunningham. Wilma Dean O'Bannon Webb Cunningham, age 88, passed away peacefully at home on Friday, June 17th. She was preceded in death by her parents, Malcolm Mac O'Bannon and Freddie Pruitt O'Bannon, one brother, Malcolm Marion O'Bannon, husband and father of her children, Donald E. Webb, husband, James R. Dick Cunningham, great-great-grandson, Charles, and grandson, Mark Webb. She is survived by her three children, Elaine Webb Booth, Alabaster, Alabama, Jerry Webb, Toller, Texas, and Gloria Elmore, Joe, Texarkana. She is also survived by eight grandchildren and 16 great-grandchildren. A celebration of life will be held on Saturday, September 17th at Homewood Suites, 1401 Tradewinds Boulevard in Midland, from 2 to 4 p.m. Death Notices. John Alderetti. John Alderetti, 75, of Midland, passed away August 22nd. Memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, August 26th at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Lucia Ribera. Lucia Ribera, 86, of Midland, passed away August 19th. Viewing will be Thursday, August 25th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a prayer service to begin at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Funeral service will be Friday, August 26th at 2 p.m., also at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to Pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com.
Hi, this is Linda, and today I'm reading from the Odessa American. This is Wednesday, August 24th, 2022. Gary Gaines remembered for faith and football. Odessans are remembering Gary Gaines as both a football legend and a man of faith who made the world a better place. Gaines's family said in a statement, the former coach died Monday in Lubbock after a long battle with Alzheimer's disease. He was 73. Gaines may best be known in Odessa for his 1989 perfect football season and state championship, but he's known everywhere as the coach of the Permian High School Panthers, made famous in the celebrated H.G. Buzz Bissinger book, Friday Night Lights. That book would become a hit movie and later a TV series. Former Odessa High coach Ron King and Gaines crossed paths several times during their careers, most notably in 1986, when King, fresh out of college, was hired to coach at Nimitz Middle School when Gaines was coaching at Permian. King said that he came to the interview and was hired right after and had to make sure. He started talking about what I would be doing and what I was. I've got the job, King said. He had so much influence on me, not only as a young coach, but as a young man right out of college. He taught me what I needed to be successful as a coach, how to coach kids, and how to talk to kids to teach them to believe in themselves. I've had two men that were father figures to me, and Coach Gaines was one of them. John Wilkins, who preceded Gaines as Permian's head football coach and also as ECISD's athletic director, said Tuesday he hired Gaines originally as an assistant football coach and then later hired him again to lead the Panther football program. Wilkins said Gaines was a fine man who made an impact on coaching. Gaines made many stops in West Texas during a 30-year coaching career, but was best known for his 4-year stint leading the highly successful program at Permian. Gaines returned to Permian later in his career in 2009 to head the program. His 1988 team was chronicled by Pulitzer Prize winner Bissinger's best-selling book, which portrayed a program and school that favored football over academics. Gaines, who was played by Billy Bob Thornton in the 2004 movie, said he never read the book and felt betrayed by Bissinger after the author spent the entire 1988 season with the team. The book, which portrays Gaines as a compassionate coach caught in the win-at-all-cost culture of a high school program in football-crazed Texas, also was turned into a TV series. Gaines led Permian to the 5th of the program's 6 state championships, with a perfect season in 1989. Gaines then left to become an assistant coach at Texas Tech. He later coached 2 of Permian's rivals, Abilene High and San Angelo Central, before returning to college as a coach at Abilene Christian. Another 4-year run as Permian's coach started in 2009, And Gaines also was a school district athletic director in Odessa and Lubbock. Gaines was born in Crane in 1949, and he played for the Golden Cranes and then Angelo State before getting into coaching. I first met him when he started coaching in 1970 in Fort Stockton, said Ronnie Flowers, the founder of Athletic Supply. I was the salesman for a sporting goods company and dropped by and met him, and we started a relationship that lasted until he passed. He was one of the greatest men I ever knew. He's in a better place now, no question about it. Gaines had been suffering from Alzheimer's for several years. Gaines left Tech after Abilene High, San Angelo Central, and finally Abilene Christian University. It was there that King rekindled the relationship as he was coaching at Abilene Cooper at the time. Gaines eventually moved back to Ector County Independent School District as athletic director, which would be another stroke of luck for King. Back at Odessa High on Scott Phillips' staff after leaving Abilene Cooper, King was hired by Gaines to take over the Broncos program in March 2006. I was there when he was inducted into the Texas High School Coaches Hall of Fame, King said. I just can't find the words to pay respects. It's a big loss for the coaching profession. There are a lot of coaches he took under his wing and mentored. He had a lot of young coaches. He was a difference maker. Like when you are coaching kids, you are trying to make a difference. I think Coach Gaines did that. Mickey Owens was another young coach in the right place at the right time. Teaching at Monahans High School in 1985, Owens wasn't on the coaching staff, but took a chance. Walking into the field house, he told Gaines, who was running the Lobos program at the time, that he was willing to do anything. He took me up on it, Owens said with a laugh. He got a freebie out of me for a year. He was a superman. I did baseball in the spring and freshman football, but before he left for Permian in January, he made sure I was on the staff full time. It was a relationship that continued to this day, though Owens said it had been several years since he had spoken with Gaines because of his illness. He chose to remember the good times, like after he was hired to run the Lobos program in 2005. He would invite Gaines back to talk to the team. He would come by, and I would introduce him to the young coaches, and they thought God had walked into the room, Owens said. And his old coaching instincts would kick in, and he would start talking football with everyone. He told me one time that the roughest year he ever had was the year 1989 they won the state and national championship. One of the things that Flower will remember about his longtime friend was his faith, honesty, and commitment to the players on his team. County Approves Library Shopping by Royal McGregor. An Odessa Arts Executive Director and Chair of the Ector County Library Committee, Randy Hamm, walked out of the commissioner's court on Tuesday morning. He expressed loudly, "Let's go shopping." The Ector County Commissioner's Court unanimously approved using $250,000 in ARPA funds for architectural services for discovery, cost analysis, design, and construction of a new library. Hamm told commissioners on Tuesday morning, "There are multiple firms that plan to bid on the project. We are ready to put rubber to the road," Hamm said during the meeting. "We've done our due diligence. We've done the public input. Now we need to know the questions the commissioners have been asking since day one. Where is it going to go? How many stories is it going to be? How many square feet? How much is it going to cost? And what is it going to look like?" Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes on Monday said the funds will come from the $10 million the county set aside for lost revenue. The architectural services for discovery, cost analysis, design, and construction of a new library would allow the commissioner's court to answer many questions. Where will it go? What will it look like? How much will it cost? Greg Simmons, the commissioner for Precinct 2, said plans have slowly been moving in this direction, and he's eager to find out what those answers are going to be. "It's good to see that is progressing, even though it's going a lot slower than people would like," Simmons said. "It's good to be moving forward." Armando Rodriguez, the commissioner for Precinct 4, expressed the importance of keeping the library in downtown. He also said he has received calls from his constituents telling him about the progress the library has made under new director Howard Marks. Ham also said during his presentation to the commissioners, the library has the right leadership to continue to move forward. Marks is 90 days in, and there are a lot of changes already, Rodriguez said after the meeting. I've been getting a lot of calls that are complimenting the library. The commissioners also approved to decrease the ad valorem tax rate from 0.365 to 0.350. The required hearing for the rate change will take place at 6 p.m. September 6th at the Ector County Administration Building Annex located in room 120 at 1010 East 8th Street in Odessa. The rate will still bring in more revenue than the previous year due to rising valuations. The commissioners approved the Ector County Sheriff's Office to have an interlocal agreement between the City of Odessa and Ector County for the 2022 Burn Justice Assistance Grant Program Award. According to the Bureau of Justice Assistance website, the joint allocations for the City of Odessa and Ector County this fiscal year was a little more than $87,000. That is nearly triple what the City of Midland and Midland County received, $30,063. And the City of San Angelo and Tom Green County received $29,646,000. Commissioners approved a request for two cell phones and uniforms for newly formed Planning and Development Department. However, it will be paid out of the current budget. The agenda item of considering, discussing, and taking any necessary action on the 2022 to 2023 budget for the Emergency Communication District of Ector County was tabled. The commissioners ended the meeting in about 20 minutes as they didn't have any items for executive session. Laid to Rest by Kim Smith. Family and friends packed Calvary Assembly of God Tuesday to say goodbye to Azaria Williams, a little girl who loved her daddy's fried chicken, the Dallas Cowboys, parties, and dancing. The 11-year-old died in a mobile home fire in West Odessa, August 13th. Many of the crowd wore brightly colored T-shirts emblazoned with images of Azaria, who was getting ready to enter Ector Middle School after graduating from Downing Elementary. Throughout the hour-long life celebration service, Pastor Brad Smith spoke of Azaria's love of life despite the challenges she faced with Down syndrome, the need to trust in Jesus' love for us, and how people should emulate Azaria. Although some people may want to place blame for Azaria's death, Smith told the crowd they should turn to Jesus. You can depend on Jesus to get you through this time, but also to get you across the finish line of life, he said. Azaria, who was born in Odessa, was full of life, loved her family, and a lot of other special people in her life, including two bus drivers, Diane Long and Adelia Lopez, Smith said. Even though her life on this earth was short, Azaria lived her life to the fullest, and she enjoyed life, whether in pain or whether everything in life seemed to be going great for her, Smith said. She wasn't shy about hassling people who didn't share her love of the Cowboys, loved running her hands through her boy cousin's hair, and the TV show iCarly. Smith earned some laughs when he told the group Azaria developed a knack for playing her aunts against her mom in order to get her favorite foods, even if it meant hiding out in the restroom with some food. He described Azaria as a child with great joy and great love. I think we could all learn from her as we celebrate her life. You go through life for 11 years or however long. You've got pain in your body, and you just got stuff going on. Don't lose your joy, Smith said. One of the greatest attributes we can possess is to have great joy. Although she probably never dreamed it would be talked about at her funeral, Smith said Azaria often told people she was going to win this race, and he's convinced she did. I'm very, very confident that she's in heaven. She hasn't walked in a while, but let me tell you something. She isn't walking today. She's running. She's running those streets of gold, where the streets are paved with gold. She's not just walking there, she's running. She loved to dance on this earth, but I'll tell you what, today she's dancing on the streets. She's entered into a place called heaven, a place I long to go, a place with no more sorrow, no more death, no more sin, no more heartache or pain, and you can go there as well, Smith said. Smith told the crowd Azaria would not want them to mourn for her. She'd just want them to win their race, too, and join her. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths, who worked with Azaria's grandfather and currently works with her aunt, described the family as good people. No child born into their family could be loved more, he said. People with Down syndrome, like Azaria, and like his 40-year-old niece, are the most precious people who live among us, Griffiths said. They love unconditionally. They are the angels among us. If everybody could love like Down syndrome people, what a world we would live in. I wouldn't even have a job because they're so pure, sweet, kind-hearted, Griffiths said. Following the service at the church, the crowd made their way to American Heritage Cemetery. Azaria is survived by her father and mother, Christopher Andrew and Misty Michelle Williams, 7 siblings, Amaya Williams, Christopher Andrew Williams Jr., Aria Williams, Sean Perkins, Jessica, Robert Zamora, Tristan Collins, Sarah Lopez, and Javon Landreth, and her biological mother, Amber Landreth, as well as a host of other loving family members.
Hello, this is Cindy, continuing to read from the Odessa American. Local news roundup. Woman accused of shooting two. An 18-year-old Odessa woman was arrested Tuesday after witnesses told police she set up a fight at Woodson Park Sunday and then shot two girls, ages 17 and 15. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers received a report of a shooting at Woodson Park on East Murphy on Sunday, and they found a teenager with a gunshot wound to her chest. She was taken to Medical Center Hospital. They later learned of another teenager who had been taken to Odessa Regional Medical Center with a gunshot wound to her arm. Witnesses told police that Kavaya Jefferson and several other people on Snapchat agreed to meet at the park to fight, and several others met there to watch. According to the report, a witness showed officers a message written by Jefferson stating, "I'll shoot thee, expletive." An OPD officer wrote in his report that, according to the message, Jefferson went on to say she'd shoot the girl because she, Jefferson, was the only one who cared about two people whose names were redacted from the report. One of the witnesses said she saw Jefferson with a handgun, heard her cock the gun, heard the shot, and saw one of the victims fall to the ground. Jefferson then fled the scene in a sports utility vehicle, the witness said. Witnesses who spoke to officers at ORMC said Jefferson's boyfriend tried to take the gun away from her, but she fired it and a bullet hit one of the victims in the chest. According to the report, they believed that bullet traveled through the first victim and then hit the other one in the arm. No details about the condition of the teenagers was included in the report released Tuesday. Jefferson was arrested on suspicion of 2 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon Tuesday. She remains in the Ector County Jail on surety bonds totaling $150,000. Details emerge on phone threats to church. More details have come to light about threats made to the Connection Christian Church earlier this month. According to an Odessa Police Department report released Tuesday, officers received a 911 call around 12:30 p.m. August 11th from someone at the church stating a man was threatening to come inside the church on Tanglewood to shoot people. When officers arrived, they didn't see anyone outside the church, but they touched base with a church employee inside. She told them she'd gotten a call on the church's cell phone from a man who had become upset. According to the report, a man said he needed to pray immediately, and if he didn't get to, he was going to shoot out the windows in front of the church. He also said he was going to come inside and shoot everyone if she told anyone about the call. The woman was able to get the attention of her co-workers while on the phone with the man, and they gathered inside one room and called the police. The report stated the man hung up the phone when the woman told him she was uncomfortable with questions he was asking. Because there was a large presence of law enforcement officers at the time of the incident, OPD sent out a notice on the department's app. The investigation revealed the caller was out of state. Teens facing felony charges. Two teenagers are facing felony charges after they fled from police during a drug investigation. According to an Odessa Police Department report, undercover officers arranged to buy an ounce of marijuana from Joe Angel Juarez, 17, at a West 10th Street business on August 16th. As the officers watched Juarez and Jizayas Lanez, 17, leave a home on Noble Avenue in a Chevrolet Malibu and head toward the business, they saw them blow through a stop sign at 10th Street and Whitaker Avenue. The officers tried to pull the teenagers' car over, but they evaded the officers. According to the report, Lanez crashed the car at 33rd Street and West County Road, and he and Juarez ran away but were apprehended a short time later. During a search of the car, officers found an ounce of marijuana, and during a search of the home on Noble, they found five clear baggies of marijuana and a THC cartridge. Juarez was arrested on suspicion of evading arrest, delivery of marijuana, tampering with physical evidence, and possession of a controlled substance more than 1 gram, less than 4 grams. He was released from the Ector County Jail August 18th after posting surety bonds totaling $14,000. Lanez was arrested on suspicion of 2 counts of evading in a motor vehicle, evading arrest and leaving the scene of an accident, causing $200 or more in damage. He was released from jail after posting surety bonds totaling $12,000. Woman accused of child endangerment. A 30-year-old Odessa woman was arrested Sunday after a neighbor called police to report her 2-year-old son had been running around naked for at least 30 minutes. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a resident of the 1200 block of North Tom Green Avenue anonymously called 911 around 4 p.m. Sunday and asked police to check on the naked little boy. When police arrived, they found him standing on a tall, slippery fake rock that was surrounded by a piece of broken furniture and an upside-down bike. The child had defecated on himself and wasn't wearing clothes or shoes. Had the boy fallen, the sergeant stated the items could have caused major injury. The rock was tall to the point that the kid would have had to use the chair that was up against it to stand on top of it, the sergeant wrote in his report. The witness further observed the child attempting to jump a fence into the backyard of an abandoned residence, which had construction equipment laying around that the child could easily have cut himself on. The sergeant had to knock on the door several times to get anyone to answer it, and it was answered by 2 other unclothed children. The kids then went and woke up their mother, Betty Lee Rosales. Rosales was arrested on suspicion of endangering a child, a state jail felony, punishable by up to 2 years in jail. She was released from the Ector County Jail Monday after posting a $4,000 surety bond. Odessan facing felony charges. An Odessa man is facing several potential felony charges after police said they linked him to a burglary and 2 stolen vehicles. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a 52nd Street resident called police on August 7th to say his Ford F-250 had been stolen, along with $1,000 in cash, an iPad, a set of Milwaukee tools worth $1,000, a portable printer, a bucket of pipe fittings, and a set of brand-new taillights. Officers tracked the iPad to a residence on Century Avenue, and 3 people inside the home said they'd seen Jared Lee Crenshaw, 30, in a pickup truck, matching the description of the stolen truck. Officers spoke with Crenshaw on the phone, and he gave them a variety of stories about the iPad and the truck. At one point, he said that he gave the truck back to the friend who gave it to him because it came with too many problems, since people almost got arrested over it. The officer sought a warrant for Crenshaw's arrest, charging him with unauthorized use of a motor vehicle. 1 week later, employees of A&B Service and Actuation called authorities to say someone had broken into the business on East Interstate Highway 20 the night before and stole a Ford F-350 pickup truck, $7,000 in hand tools, $10,000 in machinist tools, $3,000 in power tools, a 65-inch TV, a crossbow, a $2,500 Fluke meter, and $1,000 in straps. Officers tracked the pickup truck to the 2800 block of East 11th Street and found several of the stolen items inside it. According to the report, Crenshaw ran away from officers when he saw them, hopped over a barbed wire fence, and hid in a shed where he was arrested. Crenshaw eventually confessed to breaking into the business and stealing the items and the truck. Police found the TV, 4.2 grams of methamphetamine, and other stolen items inside his hotel room. Police found the Ford F-250 that had been stolen on August 7th in a parking lot on South John Ben Shepherd Parkway following Crenshaw's arrest. Crenshaw remains in the Ector County Jail on the following charges: 2 counts of unauthorized use of a motor vehicle, fraudulent use of or possession of identifying information, evading arrest, burglary of a building, and possession of a controlled substance more than 4 grams, less than 200 grams. His bonds totaled $74,000. Senior Center Health Fair fundraiser is Thursday, by Melanie Thomas. Businesses and organizations with services catered toward the senior population will be featured at the annual health fair fundraiser Thursday from 9 to 11 a.m. at the Northside Senior Center. Senior Center Director Donna Greaves said about 25 businesses and organizations will have tables set up in the multipurpose room and will have information on what is all available to area residents aged 60 and older. Graves said the businesses include Texas 211, Legal Aid of Northwest Texas, area funeral homes, banks, and assisted living and nursing home facilities. Closed during the height of the pandemic, Graves said the center reopened in July of 2021 and has seen 100 to 130 seniors come through the doors daily to participate in the activities offered, which include bingo, pool, bridge, low-impact exercise, and lunch that is cooked daily in the center's kitchen. She said some of the senior women bring their crafts with them to work on at the center. For those not ready to enter the building, she said the center offers a grab-and-go lunch, currently funded through the state during the pandemic. Desi Castillo, 80, said he plans to be at Thursday's event and encourages other seniors to come out to get information because it will be beneficial to them. Castillo, who comes to the center to play pool and bingo and for the meal, said he has been coming to the center for 25 years. "I don't think I would be alive because I wouldn't have anything to do," Castillo said, referring to why he comes to the center. He said he is at the center every day, Monday through Friday, from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. He said he was at home going crazy when the center was closed, and said he is glad that it is open again. The Northside Senior Center is located at 1225 Adams Avenue. For more information about the center and the event, call 432-337-5281.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.